This is Outside In, a show about the natural world and how we use it. I'm Sam Evans Brown. Heads up, this next segment involves mature language related to human sexuality and a discussion of human and animal sexual behavior. Here's producer Taylor Quimby.
In my admittedly limited experience interviewing geologists for this program, I've noticed they tend to share a common complaint. Where people connect easily to science about animals, plants, and other charismatic aspects of the natural world, the public struggles sometimes to relate in the same way with the actual Earth. Recently, though, I had the pleasure of reading a short book of prose poetry that bucks the trend, connecting geology, human relationships, queer identity, and eroticism in intimate and unexpected ways.
A dike, according to geology, is a sheet of magma born in a fracture. Dikes are best understood as the veins of a volcano, coursing hot and varicose toward the surface to erupt. Because of this, dikes are always younger than the body of rock in which they've made their home. Born differently than the mother rock, they make their presence known in rebel coloration, black against white, striped against mottled, crystal against sand. Geologists consider dikes intrusive formations, in part because they were formed underground until exposed.
That's science writer and essayist Sabrina Imbler, reading from their chapbook, titled Dike, in parentheses, Geology. It's the story of Kohala, Hawaii's most ancient volcano, also the story of a breakup. It's part science writing, part poetry, and not the sort of work that I can easily summarize here, but needless to say, there are passages about volcanic dikes, about the Greek island of Lesbos, about colonialism, and about falling in and out of love. I spoke to Sabrina about the book and about the art of blending science and personal essay. Hi, Sabrina.
Hi, Taylor.
So when we first spoke about the chapbook, you told me, among other things, that it began as a college writing assignment. And I'm wondering, what made you focus on volcanoes specifically for this assignment?
It was for a college writing assignment, and the volcanoes somewhat happened serendipitously. I didn't have an idea of how I wanted to write about it, but I knew that I wanted to write about a breakup that I had just gone through. And I was walking by a used bookstore, and they had a $1 book sale out in front. And I saw there was a little book, like a children's picture book called The Birth of an Island, that was very old, but it had these beautiful illustrations about how volcanoes form and how they emerge and how they erupt. I write a lot about myself, I think, but I feel uncomfortable writing directly about myself. I like to sort of like transpose myself onto an object or a creature. And in this case, I wondered, you know, what would it be like to write about this breakup through the perspective of a volcano? Kohala's windward flank is studded with dikes, which forced their way out of her magma back when she still erupted. Crawling out like too many spiders from a crack, they fractured her sides, forming faults called horse and grabens, misshapen toddler words that clawed their way into geology textbooks that prevent rainwater from falling naturally into the thirsty earth.
As someone who writes about science, I'm betting you feel, as I sometimes do, that technical jargon, while super useful and descriptive for academics and scientists, you know, it can sometimes get in the way of connecting lay people to a particular discipline. How did you approach the terminology of geology, and how did you sort of come to that perspective?
Most of the research for this book happened on Wikipedia. The title comes from like the Wikipedia page for one of the many pages that describe dike, and this one just happened to be like dike geology. There's also like dike slang, you know, like I felt like very inspired just by the sort of hyperlinking wormholes that Wikipedia invites you to go into. And for geology, I mean, it was a field that I had almost no familiarity with. And so whenever there was an interesting word, I just clicked on it because I was like, what does that mean? Like, I didn't know that dike was such a, you know, like frequent and common, commonly used word in geology. And so to see all these other words that either carried with them like societal implications or, you know, ways that I had understand them before and now like they had new meanings, such as dike. There were also words that I felt like I had never heard of before and deeply felt like fake words, which I understand like in every field of science, there are words that can feel fake if you haven't encountered them before. But I mean, it's interesting. I feel like so much of the poetry in the book came just from these Wikipedia entries where these words were treated with such like reverence and seriousness, like the word horsts being used. Like, I don't know, it felt like a delight to be able to introduce people to some of those words.
So there's a very healthy amount of eroticism in this work. And I loved one reviewer said a three-word takeaway from the book is that geology is horny. but generally speaking, as I was reading through, I was thinking, you know, you do see a lot of connections and links between the natural world and human sexuality, the birds and the bees, like tropes around that sort of thing. But generally, it feels different than some of those other examples I'm pointing towards. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your thoughts on sexuality and natural world science writing, both in this piece, but also more broadly, knowing that you do a lot of science writing.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for saying that it felt different. I really hoped that it would. I guess when I'm not writing like very horny books about volcanoes, I do a lot of just like science journalism, and I mainly write about more charismatic creatures like bugs or shrimps. But, you know, anthropomorphizing and anthropomorphization is something that comes up a lot in science writing, and it's something that I always try to steer clear of. It can be irresponsible and sort of dangerous to try to understand creatures and their lives through the ways that we understand our own, both because it can mean that we misunderstand those creatures, and also because it can sometimes come at the cost of like the humans that we're comparing them to. I recently did this story about shipworms, which are a kind of clam that live, they look more like worms, but they're technically a mollusk. And their unusual sexual practices, which include like large sessions of group sex with lots of like spawning at the same time and simultaneous rhythmic consecutive hermaphrodism. And there were a lot of stories that came out about that study that sort of, you know, led with like, shipworms are having orgies on boats, like shipworms are all polyamorous. And I really appreciated, you know, when I talked to the scientists, they were frustrated with some of the way that their study came out because they had spent, you know, all this time researching and documenting and carefully studying the way that shipworms mate. And then, you know, they come out with the study and someone picks it up and calls it like an orgy. So I think, you know, we have great responsibility as science communicators to be careful and compassionate towards the subjects that we talk about and to try to make their stories resonate for a broader audience, but not at the expense of communicating the complexity that they carry.
Right.
With this, I felt like, not like I had gotten a free pass, but I felt like there would be less of the danger of miscommunicating the actual sex lives of volcanoes, which turning a volcano into a creature that can feel queer desire, I felt like I wasn't going to give someone the wrong impression about volcanoes, if that makes sense. Holding your hand feels like holding hands with a rock. That's how hard your calluses are, how fiercely your skin has vowed to repair itself. You tell me your hands change depending on what rocks you climb. Limestone and quartzite soften your skin, reducing its ridges to rolling plains. But granite and volcanic tuff harden it, demanding a ripple of stone-hard bumps below your fingers.
The science isn't the focus of this chapbook necessarily. It is sort of intertwined. But as someone who has done, you know, more quote-unquote objective science journalism, I wonder what your thoughts are about bringing the self into science writing, both as a tool for communication, but also, you know, maybe more as a tool for empathy. I'm not sure.
I think it's my personal opinion that it's impossible to not bring the personal into science writing or science communication, because, you know, we are animals that exist on this earth, and like we depend on a lot of the same resources that non-human animals or plants or other forms of life also depend on. Thinking about science journalism, a lot of people say that, you know, all journalists need to be objective, and I think that there is a way to be an objective journalist while also bringing who you are as a person and your identity into your reporting in the way that, like, perhaps, you know, your race or your sexuality or your gender inflect the way that you see science and science as an institution which has long been touted as being objective but has done so much harm to so many marginalized communities. And I think that it's, in fact, more responsible to, you know, if you are someone who holds these marginalized identities, like to sort of use that as a way of critiquing science and as a way of approaching science communication to make it more accessible and more inclusive. The volcano named Kohala, who saw the poles switch, now wears golf courses and seaside resorts like flowers in her hair. Golfers and caddies, after losing balls in ponds or sand pits, often report finding fossils of trilobites and fish at the peak of the mountain. She has begun to spit out everything caught in her lava over thousands of years, petrified carcasses of palm leaves, undelivered wishes, blood and hearts and bones. I felt very connected to this volcano, which has like been colonized in lots of ways, even though our experiences are like no way the same. And, you know, but I think there's something also to consider when you are a science communicator, which is like, whose land is the science you are communicating about, like done on? And were those people, you know, were the indigenous people of that land like involved in it or asked to participate or compensated in some way? And I think that's something that some people might not consider is like, I don't know, like objective communication would do, but I think that objective communication should do that. And yeah, it's just something that I think about a lot.
Sabrina Imbler is the author of Dyke, in parentheses, Geology. They've also written for Atlas Obscura, the Sierra Club magazine, and more. You can find out more about their work at nhpr.org.